Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is DesignFootball.com podcast, episode 25. My name is Jay, I'm the resident blogger on DesignFootball.com. Today I'm going to be talking about the retro football shirt market, or the retro kit market, and I'm joined by John Devlin, famous for the True Colours football kits books and True Colours website. Hello John, how are you?
Hello Jay, yeah, good thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. So, just to make things clear, what we're going to be talking about today is shirts which have been recreated for the modern market. So shirts from 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe earlier, maybe even more recent, but re-released in various forms for the current consumer, the consumer of 2017. What are your feelings on... I mean, there are lots of different areas of this market, but what are your general feelings on the concept of recreating something from the past in that way? Is it something that appeals to you?
It does appeal. I find it immensely confusing. And I'm kind of old enough to remember when Toffs first started and looking at what they emphasised then, what their focus was then, and watching how it's changed and where we're at and how it relates to people wearing kits. Because, of course, you know, it's only relatively recently that you could go to a game wearing a two-year-old or three-year-old shirt and not feel a fool. You know, years ago, you'd be out of date. You couldn't do that. You had to wear the latest kit. It feels like now there's a bit more of a richer, dare I say, potpourri of shirts that you could choose to wear to a game. And that's where I think, you know, the retro shirt makers are jumping on that now.
Yeah, so there's something we'll come on to in a second, is the idea of what is a retro shirt versus an original shirt. Original shirt with a small O, meaning something that you've either held on to or acquired more recently that is the original release. So there could even be maybe a snobbery between the two. So is that a remake, or is that the original thing? And quality often tells you in different ways. Quality will tell you. So sometimes you'll look at it and say, "Well, okay, well, that's not accurate." And sometimes you look at something and say, "Well, that's actually battered. So I assume that's old. So well done for still having that shirt from your youth, or well done for managing to acquire it through whatever means are open to you." The reason why this has come to the fore recently is Barcelona have announced a new range with Copper. So Copper is a retro brand. They do various things. They do T-shirts and all kinds of different things. But they do retro ranges as well. They've got various clubs, and I assume it's fully licensed. But the new one that they have, which is entirely official, is Barcelona. And they've done very well. A lot of those shirts are really desirable. But I noticed that there are also ranges on the Scoredraw website, which Scoredraw is obviously another big retro manufacturer, and on the Toffs website, and Toffs you've already mentioned. What is the thinking behind that? Do you have any idea on licensing, on how someone could be the official partner when it comes to retro wear, but there will still be other brands making it and selling it? Because, for example, Scoredraw is available through Sports Direct, I think. So they do very right. well through that.
Yeah. It's... I lose a lot of sleep over it, to be honest. I do wonder a lot about this, late into the night. licensing in football goes through different, as far as I'm aware, it goes through different phases. And certainly sort of 5 or 6 years ago, it was all about exclusive deals. So clubs were signing exclusive deals with poster companies, book publishers, stationery, you know, it was very much, and you couldn't touch it if you weren't that company. I'm wondering now, looking at this, because I think we've even got Barca stuff on Tofts as well. So you're looking at them across three different ranges.
Yeah,
it's very odd if they are doing that, if they're not having an official licensee. But also, could it be that actually one company are making it and could almost subcontracting it or sub-licensing it through the other firms? That might be what's happening, because I really can't believe that there's three different companies making three different styles of Barca shirts. I think there's more to it than that, but quite what that deal is, I'm not party to.
Yeah, I wonder if it's old contracts that are ongoing, and maybe they have a cut-off period. So I don't know whether Copper maybe take over a particular period, and then Scoredraw and Tofts retain other periods, and then eventually that will come to an end. I don't know.
No, there is overlap looking at some of the stuff there. It's funny because, I mean, as I say, Tofts were always the kind of market leaders, although there was another company called Arkwright way back in the 90s. I don't know if they merged with Tofts. I'm not sure. But when Scoredraw came along, which, if my memory is correct, I first became aware of them probably a few years after my second book came out, the stuff disappeared from Tofts and appeared on Scoredraw. So that suggested to me that Scoredraw had plucked those contracts away from Tofts. But again, we're looking at it now and we're seeing the same shirts on all three sides. So it's slightly different.
Yeah. Yeah, so the way I used to look at it is Tofts, when they say the old-fashioned, because Tofts started to say the 90s, did they? Would that be right?
I think it's 1990, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So especially then, if you're going back far enough from there for something to be retro or something to be commonly accepted as retro, then you're going back to a period before sponsors, before manufacturers' logos. And often, if you look back at how Admiral started, Admiral used to just make replica shirts for loads of teams, didn't they? And they didn't really care. It didn't matter who made the actual playing wear for each club. They would just make a shirt and say, this is a Celtic shirt or a Manchester United shirt.
Before Admiral's golden period, you're quite right. They would knock out a Celtic shirt, a Crystal Palace shirt, or whoever it was.
So Tofts sort of went down that line. And I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of it, whether they actually applied to each club for licensing. And then each club probably would have to go to their own manufacturer and say, look, we've got this great deal available to us here. Will you allow us although we have exclusivity, you have exclusivity with us.
Yeah.
Do you allow us to license out our old shirts? Or they go through their own contract and say, actually, this is only for this season shirts. We've got a good deal with them. So the rest of the IP is actually ours to do what we want with. So they pass it out to them.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I know when clearing the stuff for True Colours, a couple of clubs said to me, we like this idea, but we're not sure how our current sponsor is going to be, how pleased they will be when we're highlighting our previous sponsor. It's like talking to a girlfriend about a past girlfriend, isn't it? You know, it's a little bit morally and ethically questionable. So that certainly was an issue. But what you've said is really interesting, that when Tofts first started, and I remember this distinctly, it was as a reaction to modern modern sponsored logoed up shirts. It was the antidote. It was saying, these things are hideous. Let's go back to the 60s and the 50s and wear heavy old button up collars and then crew necks and stuff. So it was actually a reaction to commercialism in football shirts. And yet look how it's come, you know, 20 years later, look where we're at now.
Yeah, so this is the newer development is, and Tofts, I think, started with this. As time went on, things from 10 years prior to where we are now suddenly would have had the manufacturer's logo on it, would have had sponsors, would have had more detail, certainly Adidas stripes and so on. So I remember Tofts started bringing out these shirts and the quality wasn't great. The accuracy wasn't great. And I wonder whether it's just we're not careful enough with this. We're not putting enough effort into this to make this accurate. Or things like Adidas stripes, that probably wouldn't be allowed, and it might be an agreement. Yes, you can recreate it, but don't put our stripes on it.
That's right.
But I also wonder if there is actually a stipulation that, yeah, you can make it, but it's got to be crap. Because if you make it really good, that is going to affect our sales in another way. And some of them were so bad that I wonder whether that was actually said, that you can make it poorly, but don't make it good.
It's an interesting point of view. I mean, I must say at this stage, I'm not kind of endorsing any retro brand above another, or not putting anyone down, you know. But that's an interesting concept. I remember Toffs being very, very proud. I've got several old Toffs catalogues, which I've kept, and these two is lovely A4 catalogues, and they're always incredibly proud of the quality of what they were doing. Again, because effectively the undercurrent of context was, or message was, current shirts aren't very good. They're all manufactured in Thailand and blah, blah, blah. We're going back to good old British manufacturing with heavy old cotton. You know, that they were very proud of that. I think the difficulty came because a lot of the time, the older shirts, the 40s, 50s, 60s shirts, they wouldn't have been badged up a lot of the time. And of course, unless there's a badge on it, it's just a blue shirt or just a red shirt. Yeah. So Toffs had to bend the rules slightly by slinging badges on it, because that was their way of saying, this is an officially licensed product. But of course, the other thing is, certain design elements, like the three stripes is a great example, you just can't reproduce those. So they're a no-go. And then finally, and this really came to the fore with the Admiral stuff in the 70s, if you put out an Admiral retro shirt exactly the same as it was in the 70s, only the hippest of the hip would wear it, because you'd struggle to get away with those collars and that cut in today's fashion climate, if you like. So there was always that thing that the designs were taken and just made that little bit more palatable for today's high street market. And that's always been, and I'm sure Jay, I think you'd agree, that as a football kit anorak, that's the thing that's always, you always think, oh, it's not quite right, you know. Because you're looking at a style from 30, 20 years ago.
Yeah, we are obsessive to an unhealthy level. But I would look at that and say that there's an integrity issue with that. If that is what you've chosen as your business model, and this is what we're going to do, then to then say, oh, we have to water this down. Look at the bottom line. We have to water this down because people are not going to buy this if we don't water it down. And there is an element of that, that the market for the retro shirts, so the 50s, 60s and 70s, we're not it again. I mean, I don't know how many of these podcasts I need to say we're not the market. So it doesn't matter what we think, because they're not aiming at us. But with those shirts, I think it is the... I don't know what phrase to use here, but the fan of the football club rather than the football shirts. Yeah, are aiming it at not fair weather fans, but maybe casual fans who are not as obsessive as us. And if you're doing that, then you've got to make it saleable in a way that maybe compromises the accuracy. And
that's right.
And for us, it's a pity.
And when you look back again, and I'm going to go on about this again, when Toffs first started, as well as being a reaction to the awful, that's their term, not mine, the awful commercialism of football, we're going back to the good old days, they were also targeting a certain type of fan and a certain age of fan who felt like they couldn't get away with wearing a sponsored shirt in shiny polyester. They were targeting older guys, older people, to go back to that. That was their initial market.
Yeah.
Because the thinking was, older guys can't get away with wearing a football shirt. And of course, what's happening is, if you look at the early 90s, the older person, would they have had replica shirts? Possibly not. So it may well be that some of those tough shirts was the first retro replica shirt they may have ever have owned. But now we're looking at people that have grown up fully with replica shirts. And again, it just changes that that market, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's... I like that idea, and I agree with it entirely, that it is going from maybe a middle age market, when the current replica shirt market didn't, certainly in the 90s where it really boomed, it wasn't really going for that. It was going for kids a lot of the time, and it was going for maybe people in their 20s and 30s. So to aim your product at older people straight away is definitely what was happening, and definitely how it got picked up, because they went, oh, yeah, no, this is more classic. But when you think about it, it's entirely perverse, because just because the older person maybe doesn't like that shirt, you're still replicating what was on the pitch. And it doesn't matter whether it was 100 years ago or 50 years ago or 20 years ago. The person on the pitch was 20 years old or 20 to 30 years old. So it doesn't make, because you're wearing an older style shirt, it doesn't make it, it shouldn't make it any more palatable to the eye. But somehow we've got this twisted logic where we go, oh yeah, the older you are, the more retro classic shirt you're going to wear.
But also the funny thing as well is that if you think back, I mean, I remember the Tofts market really exploded in the mid-90s. That's my memory of it. When we're looking at Euro 96, we're looking at fantasy football, people like that. And that was all about, I don't think people ever said it outrightly, but there was always that subtext again that they were saying, you know, we're not supporting the modern commercialism of football. We reject that. We're going to go back to the good old days. So there was that stuff going on as well. But you're quite right. It's still what people were wearing. And you either get with the program that this is how shirts are now, this is how your team looks, or not. But and again, people in their 50s and, dare I say, 60s now, they may have been the first generation of Admiral wearing replicas back in the 70s. So it's all to do with the nostalgia, the looking back, and what that means to you. And it's interesting now, when I think Scordraw were the first company that I remember really hitting the 80s stuff. So Scordraw, when they arrived, I think they took the Tofts model and said, okay, but enough of that 60s and 70s long sleeve crew neck, let's go right up to date. Let's have Hafnir on an Everton shirt and Holston on a Spurs shirt, and here we go.
Yeah, that was kind of an untapped market, but also because of time passing. So time passes, and then when you say retro again, retro, well, hold on, you've got to include the 80s in this now, and then the 90s, and then the noughties eventually.
I think there's always a trend. This is just my theory. I think even with music and everything else, there's always a 20-year period. That seems to be, in the 70s, it was all about the 50s. In the 80s, it was all about the 60s. You know, that seems to be the general period, I feel, anyway.
The other thing with the shirts prior to, say, the 80s and certainly the 70s, certainly the 80s and probably prior to the 70s as well, is there's a timeless quality to shirts. The shirt design would have been kept on for many years, and it would have been disposed of when they got tatty, I suppose, and then they would have gone, okay, well, what can our supplier make us now? Oh, right, you've got round collars on your shirts now, okay, that's fine, yeah, we'll take that then. And that's how it would have changed. It would have just changed organically with the times, but you wouldn't have necessarily...
Very subtly, that the average fan wouldn't have noticed. It's only when we look back at it and we can say, oh, look at that, actually that collar is slightly different to the 56 collar, you know, whatever.
And I suppose a good example of this is probably the Arsenal shirt book that you had a certain amount of involvement in, and that sort of breaks it down, and you see the early shirts through the 20th century and how similar they were and how they changed, and a much more gradual thing than the immediate changes season to season that we have now. And that transition that you mentioned between Tofts and Scordraw, well, one example of that is, and you say you don't want to choose which one's better, but I used to like Tofts. I used to see the adverts on the back of the World Soccer when I was a kid, and I used to think that's fantastic. I don't think I ever bought... Oh, I'll tell you what I bought from them. I once bought... I was running the London Marathon, and...
Really? I never knew that.
Oh, it doesn't seem possible now, I know. But in 2007, I ran the London Marathon. And for whatever reason, I wanted to wear a retro pair of shorts. And I rang up the Celtic Club shop and I went, okay, what I need is a pair of your 60s shorts with the number on the front and the back. I want the... And they just... I think it was run by Kitbag at the time. And the person was just going, we don't have 60 shorts. What are you talking about? And I remember being furious and saying, well, why don't you have 60 shorts? Surely that's obvious. The 60 shorts with the numbers on the front and the back, a big number on the front and the back. So what I did, I bought a 60s pair of shorts from Toffs. And I got my my girlfriend at the time to sew on. I cut these. I went to a material place in Bow in East London. Like, and they looked at me like, well, how much do you need then? How many metres of this do you need? And I went, 1 metre. And I said, 1 metre. They looked at me like I was a complete maniac. And so I bought 1 metre of green fabric from there. I took it home and I think I cut it out and then told my girlfriend at the time. And not only, this is how crazy my mind is. Instead of having like 7 or something on the back, or even a 10 on the front and back, so it was two numbers, I told my girlfriend at the time to sew on a 29 on the front and a 29 on the back, because that was like my favorite number. I mean, how perverse is that? But anyway, I went off on a tangent there. Sole purchase from Toffs, I think.
I've only ever bought one retro shirt, and that was from Toffs, and that was the classic Umbro's Shrewsbury Town shirt. I was going to a fancy dress party as I wanted to go as Derek Smalls from Spinal Tap. So I bought that shirt, and of course I looked at it, it hasn't got an Umbro logo, what do I do? And I made an Umbro logo out of paper and stuck it on for the evening and did it that way. I couldn't go out without having the Umbro logo on there as well.
The collar's not as big, though, is it?
No, it isn't. It was a little bit. It was a little bit of a disappointment, I have to say, just a tiny bit, because the collar needed to be bigger.
I'm not going to say how to do this, but there is one shirt I want, and I'm not going to say what shirt it is because that's too much. But there is. I'll tell you afterwards. That's harsh. That's harsh to the avid listener. But there is a shirt that I've worked out. The shirt I want, I can get from one of these, the current retro brands, and it's a fantastic shirt and incredibly rare. It's like so rare.
Okay.
The most inordinately rare shirt there's ever been, I would say, in terms of inordinately. So when you think of other shirts for the time that have been reproduced and you can get hold of, and there were so many copies, so many versions at the time, this one is incredibly difficult to get hold of. I've seen one right. in my life, and that was the reason why I saw it was because of a very specific place I was at the time.
I should look forward to that then.
I'll tell you what it is, but the thing is, you could get it from a retro stockist, but I've worked out how to get the badge that goes with it as well, which is very difficult to get hold of, and I've worked out to get that as well. So I'm going to create it. In fact, I'm going to contact the retro. This is how mad I am. I'm going to contact the retro stockist and say to them, the crest on that shirt is a little bit too high. Are you able to produce one for me where the crest is a little bit lower? And see what sort of answer I get from them. That's worth a try. Yeah. If not,
I've got a rough idea what kind of answer you're going to get. But yeah. See if I'm right.
Okay, so when this transition happened from a brand which was Toffs, who specialised in the older shirts, which did look great, I did like those a lot. Then they started making the slightly more recent things. They saw, and I agreed with the logic, they saw the shirts that weren't being retailed, and they started to jump on that, which is incredibly clever. I don't know how the licensing worked, but they did one which was, and you've said that you're going to sit on the fence over which brand is better and not, which is fine. But it was crap, which was the Tottenham Hotspur against Blackburn, the League Cup final shirt.
The Adidas.
Do you remember that one? That was where they flipped the colours. Do you remember? It was.
Yeah, but Toffs did a version of that.
Toffs did a version of that, and it was horrendous. It was so bad.
I didn't know that.
But it was a clever move to do it, because obviously it was something that wasn't available.
Yeah.
Did they win, or they lost it, didn't they? Did they win?
No, they won, I think, didn't they? I'm sure they did.
I think they lost. Oh dear, I should know. Anyway.
Yeah, you're right, they did. They did 2-1.
Okay, right, so that's probably why it wasn't. For the same reason the Southampton shirt in this season League Cup final hasn't been retailed. I'm 100% sure if they'd beaten Manchester United, they would have retailed that white third shirt.
Well, because the myth comes out, and I think Jeff Mosch mentioned it in his Spurs shirt book,
yeah,
that Adidas claimed the cost of reproducing a replica version of that shirt wasn't financially viable. I don't know if I'd buy that. I really don't. But anyway, that was what was said at the time.
I think it's the case if you don't. It's not true. It's Adidas. Adidas did it in 1991 with the Cup Winners' Cup final shirt that Manchester United wore. That was the only right. game it was worn in, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Against Barcelona in the final, and Adidas retailed it because they won the game. So maybe not for Spurs, because a League Cup win isn't regarded as highly as the other trophies, maybe. But I think for Southampton, certainly, for Southampton to win a bit of silverware, if they had won the other week, then they would have retailed that shirt.
That would have been a really nice shirt to have done. We're going off topic here, but I think that would have been a really nice shirt to have done had they won.
Yeah, I think it's a nice shirt. I don't necessarily think it was the best way to solve. I know that they wore it because they wanted to wear Southampton's colours in the final, and. Mm. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to, because they would have worn their black and grey away kit. But I don't think white shirt, red shorts, and I think the hooped socks is the best way to take to the pitch against Manchester United. I think they probably should have had white shorts on, but that's a moot point, really.
Another story.
Yeah. So this was the transitional period when they started to do that, and then Score Draw came in, and Score Draw's approach was far more with the modern shirts.
They seemed to go for it.
It was. It seemed to be that they were taking it head on and saying, okay, we're going to try and reproduce the modern style of shirts as well as we can, and they've improved over time. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, again, you're looking at some of the positioning of elements isn't quite right. And that's where, you know, I'm not touting for work here, but the kind of the areas that we operate in, and that I'd like to think the eye for detail, the likes of all of our, you know, the people we speak to about shirts, is ideal to get involved with a project like this, to really give it that once over. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
You know what, I tell you, I agree, and I wholeheartedly agree that you would be an asset to any company that's involved in any of these things, and to in terms of quality control and all these things. But I also think that when a company relies on it, I'm surprised that they get things wrong, and I again wonder if the reason why they're getting things wrong is something that I don't know about, whether it's a licensing thing or whether it's production costs. I mean, I've spoken to guys from Score Draw before, and they're very clear about the fact that they know their business. So they're fair. So if you say, oh, what about this and this, they might say, okay, well, that's an interesting idea. I know my business, so I know what will sell and how to produce things. There's masses involved in it in terms of production, in terms of day to day, making sure that you're getting the correct margin and going about it the right way. I would say there's a reason for everything, even the things that they do wrong. I don't know what that is, and maybe it is simple. This is why I will contact them and say, crest a bit high on that shirt, because if there it is just an accuracy issue, then I'd hope they'd go, if it's something that can be quickly changed, they'd go, oh, all right, cheers for that, yeah, we'll change it. And from that point on, they would update it if it just is an oversight. But I suspect in a lot of cases it's not an oversight, and there might be a specific reason for it. And it might be with the modernisation. Yeah. So adapting to the current market.
And of course, because I can't believe a club would allow their brand to go out on anything that wasn't 100% fantastic. You know, there'd be the quality control. I'd like to think that a club officially licenses it, you know, they need to check it over. It needs to be great.
I would say that I don't know if the words great and accurate are synonymous, though. That's the, where I
possibly
where I don't
not.
Know.
Yeah, possibly.
That might
not,
be
Jay.
The problem with it. The
okay.
Another range that we've noticed, as well as Toffs, Scorjaw and Copper, is the Liverpool retro range, which is you can get from their store. That one's an interesting one, and I am not 100% sure who's actually making it. There are some Scorjaw items on there, but a lot of the more recent ones don't look... They don't have Scorjaw labelling in them, I don't think.
Well, this is... Yeah, I mean, this is you've hit an interesting point here. I think when we talked about Barca earlier as well, there is definitely something... There's definitely... What's the word? Mechanics behind the scenes that we're not aware of that are meaning, you know, the way that these shirts are produced and marketed and under what label they appear. Because I think you're right. I think Liverpool are kind of working with Scorjaw to produce these shirts. I don't think the club themselves are generating them, are they?
There's two things about it that confuses me. The first thing is the accuracy on the... they've got the goalkeeper shirt. I don't know which ones they've got. They've got the last time Liverpool won the league, which is 1989-90, they had a shirt which then ran over to the next season, 1991, which was the paint fleck white triangles thing. So they've got that, and they've got the goalkeeper shirt from this season, which was the same design but in green. Both of those seem inaccurate, and they seem of a lower quality than Scorjaw usually do. So with Scorjaw now, some of them I really struggle to find the difference. There's some great ones they do. There's a Leeds one, the Yeboah Leeds shirt they do.
Oh, okay.
Which I have to actually go back and look at another picture of the original Leeds shirt to tell the differences, because it's so accurate, I think. And there are a couple of differences. Obviously, it was made by Asics. But I look at those two shirts and go, yeah, that's virtually perfect. And it's acceptable to wear that, despite it being a reproduction. It's acceptable to wear that. Those Liverpool shirts, they're poor, and that's the first query I'd have about it. Why are they so bad if Scorjaw are making them? Because I'd expect Scorjaw to do better than that. The other thing is they're using that West Germany thing, that West Germany ribbon. Now that is the thing that surprises me. Obviously, the current manufacturer at Liverpool is New Balance. So for Adidas to, I would imagine Adidas would have to license these things out, and I don't know if they would. I obviously there's previous shirts, but Adidas have been using that design recently, that ribbon thing on last year or the year before. There was a whole range that had that West Germany ribbon thing across the front, and I don't know.
I don't know. I think. If you're looking at trademarked designs, so for example, if you look at the Candy paint flicked Liverpool shirt that's out at the moment, they've just got, I think it's just a single white stripe on the sleeve with a little bit of grey trim to kind of hint at what the original Adidas one would have been like. Yeah. So the three stripes, we all know the three stripes are trademarked as much as the Adidas logo. I'm wondering if the paint flicked design and the ribbon design are actually trademarked or not. I mean, of course they're part of the design, but are they something that can't then be reappropriated onto a retro shirt? Because I mean, Liverpool, Arsenal, Man United all wore the ribbon design in their training wear in the 80s. So it's accurate as far as that goes, but it might just be that that's not able to be trademarked in the same way that the Liverpool collar, the V-neck on the 86 shirt, that era, that can't be trademarked either. I don't know how that works with whether there's a payment that goes to Adidas as well. It might be. I don't know.
It must be a license thing. I can't believe that they'd do something like that. So, but these are the interesting things. And see, in teamwear designs, you'll see small companies and you go, doesn't that look like an Adidas design? That was, I'm sure that was an Adidas design a few years ago. They just ripped that off. And of course they haven't ripped it off. Or generally speaking, they haven't ripped it off, although I know some teamwear companies that do. But generally speaking, they haven't ripped anything off. They've contacted the manufacturer. I don't know which order this will happen in, but they'll contact the manufacturer. And the manufacturer's gone, okay, well, we're not using that at the minute. Let's make some money from it. So they will license it out. Now, and you'll pay a fee for that. But I don't know what order that happens in. Maybe they do it, and then the company contacts them and say, well, we can sue you, or you can carry on making it, but you pay us a fee for it. So you choose how much it's going to hit your pocket here.
There may be a couple of reasons for it. I mean, I think the bruised banana Arsenal shirt, that particular pattern, that cropped up on several lower league shirts the season after, 2 years after. You know, there was no subterfuge there. That's what happened. It was, you know, pinched almost.
Didn't Portsmouth have it on their shirt the same season?
Something similar. That was the influence shirts, wasn't it? I think Portsmouth and Cardiff had something very similar to it. I'm thinking of, I don't know if I'm getting Huddersfield or Stockport in my head, but one of those two, I'm sure, wore very, very similar V-neck, the kind of zigzag geometric design. Mm. But again, though, Jay, you know, you look back at that period, and all these different manufacturers, such as Scoreline, Ribeiro, even Buckter, they clearly were sourcing fabric from the same warehouses, because you'd see the same shadow patterns appearing on several different brand shirts. So there's always been a little bit of a kind of dipping into a big pot, if you like, and then sticking a logo on it and putting it out there. And maybe that was what was going on there. I don't know.
That's interesting. That brings in another element, another stage in the production line of maybe there's a wholesaler that creates patterns and then offers them to bigger manufacturers and says, do you want this? And then they either pay for exclusivity of it or not. And if they don't, then they can then sell it out to another company as well.
That could be it. But of course, when you talk about these patterns and stuff, of course, there's been a massive leap in the retro market this year with the first shirts that appeared with manufacturers' logos on there as well, like the Spurs one.
Yeah,
so that was a huge leap in the evolution of a retro shirt.
Well, yeah, I mean, Adidas Originals used to make, so the Liverpool shirt that I'm talking about, there's the only other version of it that there's been. The one where they won the league, the last time they won the league.
Yeah.
Adidas Originals made a version of it. It wasn't accurate. And again, it makes me think... So it had the logos and everything on it, but it was produced a slightly different way. But it's when Adidas got the Liverpool contract back again in the mid-2000s. So they made some of those, which was a great move. And it was something that was... People were talking about Adidas taking over the Arsenal contract before Puma got it. And that would have been great because you would have had an official Anfield 89 shirt. You would have had Bruised Banana would have come back for Arsenal fans. So all these things would have been part of the Originals range because Adidas got the contract back.
Yeah.
So it never happened. Puma got it instead. So there have been those sorts of shirts. And Umbro were releasing retro versions. I've got an Italian 90 England shirt.
England ones, Umbro released.
Yeah, which was a reproduction. And
as you say, the key is that they've got the current kit contract. That's the key. The Spurs official retro shirt with proper branding throughout, even down to the replicate label, the tag on the shirt itself. It's the first time I'd seen that happen ever from a company that didn't own the current kit deal. Mm. And the fact that just slipped out without great fanfare is a mystery to me. I found it by accident, you know.
The Spurs one amazed me and confused me for a long time because I thought, well, obviously they were Under Armour now. How is this happening? Is this a retro shirt? At first, I thought it was the original shirt because it's very well made. That one,
incredibly.
I think people have pointed out differences. But the other thing that Umbro do is when they reproduce these shirts. So far that I've seen, and it's certainly the case with the old England shirts that they reproduced a few years ago, is they'll make it more like the player version than the replica version. I like that element. So things will be embroidered rather. And I think it's the case with the Spurs shirt that it's far closer to the player version than it is the replica version. I might be wrong, but I think so.
But again, you're all about giving quality to people now, aren't you? Mm. It's almost a premium item. What was really funny, looking at this before we spoke this morning, if you look at, because I, like you, I was really confused by this and a bit kind of like, you know, what's going on here? And I spoke to Umbro and they said, yeah, it's something we've done with Scoredraw. But again, to very little fanfare. If you look on the Scoredraw site and you look at the shirt on Scoredraw, they've photoshopped out the Umbro logo, which I find really bizarre. I don't know why. And again, we're uncovering all these mysteries about what's going on with all these different retro shirts. Why would Scordraw do that?
I wonder if that is a Photoshop. I reckon that's the old version that Scordraw were making before the license was arranged for them look to at put the Umbro logo on it.
The label's got the replicate tag, but again, it looks like but they've taken the Umbro logo off.
Oh, I apologise.
And yet you can that's look strange. At... There was another site I found this morning, just, you know, a third-party shirt site that had the complete Spurs range, including the Klinsmann kind of dark purple shirt, the plum-coloured shirt, was it? I don't know. You know, with the famous dive across the pitch when he scored. Yeah. They've got the full range that Scordraw haven't got that on their site either. So again, you think, okay, you've clearly really gone over the top here to make this as accurate as possible. Presumably with the blessing from your current kit supplier, and yet it's not being marketed in a consistent way across all sites.
I don't know about the Scordraw website. I went down the other day and people thought that Scordraw were gone, but it is back.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think, well, I assume that they've been sort of taken in by Sports Direct, but I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of what their ownership is at the minute. But I would suggest that the Scordraw website brings them only a tiny percentage of their sales, and the vast majority of their sales are through Sports Direct. But I might be wrong about that. I don't know how accurate the website is.
But I think also with the way that they're doing this, it's the big money deals involved. Because I think the reason why we're not seeing smaller brands supplying current teams is because of the sums of money are so large now. That's what's causing the problem. And clearly the money issue is vital throughout all of this in how these things come about.
Yeah. The other interesting element of that is that you're putting an Umbro logo on something, but you're going to the experts to actually make it. And I suspect that Scordraw, if that's the case, if this is a relationship between Umbro and Scordraw, licensed from Spurs with the permission of Under Armour, or out with the contracts that Spurs have with Under Armour, which is fascinating in itself. And it's interesting. Yeah, there's something else that's interesting about it. But it's interesting that you would say, Scordraw, this is your area now. You produce this shirt, and then we just put an Umbro logo on it. That's bizarre, isn't it? Even though this was ours, we made it 25 years ago, but you're better at making these now, so you make it, we'll put our logo on it. I assume that's the case.
I don't think they're better than make it. I think it suits them financially for that to happen. But is it any different to Kappa, for example, allowing many companies all around the world to produce Kappa shirts and sling a Kappa logo on, but they aren't actually produced by Kappa. It's again, you're licensing that brand. That's all you're doing there. And that's always been the problem, is that you can't fake. If you do a shirt that's fake, you're implying that Umbro have made this shirt. But in this arrangement, it is this joint venture where they're giving them the blessing. It's like the same with Puma, isn't it, and Genesis in the UK. They're not made by Puma. They're made by Genesis, who are the Puma licensees for the UK. And that's where we're... Yeah, brilliant. The brilliant kids. I mean, but that's the kind of era we're looking at now.
The other thing I was going to mention is, if that is the case, then it ties in a little bit with the end of contracts, because Spurs are leaving Under Armour to go to Nike. So I don't know whether things get a little bit lax and they just go, just do what you like.
Don't know.
We don't care anymore. Or whether there is a window of opportunity at the end of a contract where you can say, okay, well, we don't have a relationship with you. Maybe at the beginning of the season, that's where the relationship ends. So you say, this is the last season together. And now we have this window where we can do what we want with our license before our new contract starts with our new technical partner, or whatever they call them.
But again, it's really making the most and really making decent products from that era.
There's just one other that's interesting again that I'd like to mention, and that is on the Copper range. They do I think they do at least one Cork City shirt, and it's the one with the obnoxious bars, and it's basically the Adidas three stripes. So it's They like had a specific one. Like a sash one, exactly. But no other clubs really had that. They were, well, I don't know if any others. Dennis Hurley will tell me that other clubs had it, but I forget which. But that was a very distinctive Cork City design. And they've recreated that one. But that's very clearly an Adidas shirt. That's like their branding massively across it. And so I don't know how the licensing works on that, whether they've just gone, okay, we'll just take a punt on it and see what happens. I don't know. And
it's again, interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
That's a very Adidas design, and Cork City are with Nike, I think, now. So that's a strange thing as well. So how the licensing works with that. It's a great shirt. People should...
The copper stuff, I mean, they obviously lean a little bit more continental, but there's some... Mm. And it, you know, non-UK shirts, but there's some lovely stuff on there, I have to say.
The thing is, again, I don't know the business well enough to say whether it should be the case or not, but... As I mentioned with the Celtic shorts, I'm frustrated that we can't get shorts from that type. When you think how iconic the Spurs shorts were from that FA Cup final, that they're re-releasing the shirt, another version of it, this one Umbro, but they're not doing the shorts. I think they should do the shorts, and other people have called for them.
I don't know. I think I was going to say, I think you're being romantic about shorts, but that might have come out wrong. But I think the shorts nowhere near have the same iconic impact. I mean, yeah, we can pick out the Spurs shorts, and we can pick out maybe the Scotland shorts from '86. I don't think anybody would want to wear again. But there's very few shorts. I think there's very few shorts that are iconic. I think they'd be struggling with that market because, of course. Shirts that the Y replica shirts went so crazy after the initial kids wearing them to play football in is that people were wearing them not to play football in, and the idea of going into the pub or you know, shopping around town in a pair of 1991 Spurs shorts, I can't see that happening. That might be where that falls down. The business model might not be robust enough, I think.
Well, this I've argued this before. I don't know. I'm not someone who makes much money, so maybe don't ever listen to me.
Do you still wear those 29 Celtic shorts, Andrew?
I've never.
I suppose you do.
No, I don't wear them. They're in. I should. They don't fit. They really don't fit. But I wouldn't. Oh my. Oh, dear, I would cry if I tried to put them on. I think
they're that tight, are they? Yeah, okay.
No. Well, they must be. I just it would be too demoralizing to try them on. The argument for the shorts is that you go on holiday and you sit by the pool, and why would you buy a pair of, like, all right, so for swimming you have specific swimming shorts, but you could retail some shorts that are good for going swimming. You could put that netting thing in the middle, but there are opportunities to wear shorts. Why would you want to wear any pair of shorts other than football shorts? So that's I wear shorts to go running, and I'm not going to wear anything other than a pair of football shorts.
So, you make a fair point, Jay.
There is a market for it, and I will prove it one day. So as an overall summing up of the shirt market, the retro shirt market, the opposition to that is obviously the original with a small O element, and the main stockist of those is classic football shirts. What do you see as the argument between the two things? Is there a snobbery about it, and would you prefer to have the original thing or a retro remake?
I suspect there may be a little bit snobbery. I mean, I think personally I would struggle, if I was a fan, I would struggle to wear a retro shirt that wasn't as accurate as possible. So if it didn't have the manufacturer's logo, if it wasn't, if everything wasn't positioned in the same way, and let's face it, some of these things, they don't even get the sponsors' logos right. I won't name names, but some of them are even wrong, the way that the logos are laid out. So I would always want to go classic. Of course, the difficulty is the price range. You look at a lot of the Scordraw top shirts, they're actually really reasonably priced, you know, half the price arguably of a current shirt. And of course, classic football shirts, you're buying a bit of history, and naturally the price is going to be more expensive. So it's like, you know, would you be so keen to go out wearing I'm not saying they're antiques, but you're going out with an antique, would you, or is it something you're going to wrap up and keep in a cupboard? That's the argument there. But for me, I'd always be looking at accuracy, 100%.
You've summed it up perfectly there. If you can get 100% accuracy, then I would much sooner have the modern version. But some people will go the other way and say it's not the accuracy, it's the fact that it is. So it's what it actually is.
Of course. And
I would rather have the collector's item than a newer version for that reason. I don't have that element. If it's bang on, then I would sooner have a modern reproduction because no one else has worn it. It's mine, it's in good condition. Or it's in perfect condition because it's brand new. I would probably go in that direction. But that is so rare, it's so difficult to actually get that.
That's right. And I've never been a shirt collector. So I've never had that collecting. I've collected loads of stuff in my time, but not so much shirts. So I've never had that mentality. It's like if you talk to a match-worn shirt collector, you look at how their mind works. And quite often you're looking at fake match-worn shirts, you know. So it's all about your mentality and how you accept the item you've got in your hand.
Yeah. The other element to this is if you have a retro market, there's a responsibility element that comes with it. So we've talked about accuracy and the changes. There's certain shirts. So Barcelona re-released the Centenary shirt, like very soon after their Centenary. They also re-released the Netherlands shirt from the 98 World Cup when Bergkamp scored that goal against Argentina. And they re-released them like as, I don't know, as like retro examples, but say 10 years after the event or something. So that's a strange thing. So soon after something has happened to re-release it. And it was basically 100% accurate. You just need to look very, very closely to tell the difference. But sometimes what they'll do, and I think Adidas did this with the France 86 World Cup shirts. That was the first instance of it, is you will fit it into whatever the brand consistency is of the day. So, one example is the Olympique de Marseille shirt that they wore in Munich in 93 when they beat Milan in the Champions League final. Adidas re-released that recently as part of the Originals range, but the Originals range has the Trefoil logo. So they re-released it with the Trefoil logo instead of the Adidas equipment logo. The bars on the shoulder didn't actually go onto the back, and they used the modern crest as well. That was really, really frustrating for me because firstly, people are going to look at it and go, oh, right, there's that shirt again. Yeah, it's a good shirt. And buy it when actually it's not that shirt. It's really, really not that shirt.
Yeah.
And also, that is where the responsibility comes in.
Yeah.
It's not responsibility. You have a responsibility to history, to the fans, to the club in a way that goes beyond whatever's going to bring in the most sales for you, I think. And we talk about the collars and so on.
Yeah, you're talking about integrity there. And that's the nature of my work, my 9-to-5 job. That sounds to me like it's somebody very, very high up saying, well, no, we can't let that go out unless it does this. And someone else saying, but it's not accurate. It hasn't got integrity. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That could be what's going on there. And that is a shame because what you're doing, you're falling between two stones and not actually satisfying anybody properly.
Yeah. It's short-sighted, I think. There's a myopic element to it where you say, I know my business, I know what will sell. But if you do something like that, then in my eyes, but do I matter? I look at your brand and say, I remember when you did that. So your brand diminishes in my eyes because you did something that was irresponsible, I think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Yeah.
The other side, the other element, which they then think they have license to do as well, is to say, we're releasing this shirt from 1990. Say the Liverpool shirt we've mentioned. Mm. Adidas Original say, we're going to do that. We're going to re-release that shirt. It's not accurate. For whatever reason, it's not entirely accurate, but it's pretty good. Also, we're going to have a range which derives from this shirt, which is new item, which are new items that were never worn at the time, but we think they'll sell well. So there was a tracksuit top that had that paint splatter triangle thing all over it, red one, and it had, I think it had a candy sponsor across the back. So they sold that as well, which is, it's not something from the time. Nope.
Right.
What do you think about that? Do you think that's, they have license to do that? I mean,
no,
they literally have license to do it, but no, I don't.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I mean, I think we said earlier, retro tracksuits are really coming. They appear to be coming back in. There's clearly a market for that. And there's, you know, it's lovely to see some of those old tracksuits coming back, but they don't. And funny enough, that reminds me when I was doing, I think it was when I was doing my second book, and on eBay popped up a Nottingham Forest shirt, an Adidas late 70s Forest shirt in white with red trim. And of course I look at it and my jaw drops, thinking, I've never seen this before. Yeah. And I emailed the guy and said, did Forest ever wear this? He said, no. He said, that's what makes it so good. So it was a retro knockoff fantasy shirt from the 70s that was, to all intents and purposes, like you say about the candy paints black tracksuit, very feasible. You could see Forrest easily wearing a white and red version of their classic Adidas top, but they never did. It was completely fake, you know, fake news is everywhere, completely fake.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, it was a knockoff, that wasn't officially licensed, but it's, you are creating, you know, creating shirts that didn't actually ever appear.
Well, this is,
you know,
when I think about historians in 100, 200 years' time, the robot historians, the robot computer historians, and them looking back and trying to pick through all this and go, oh, yeah, that was the tracksuit they wore in this year, or that must have been a third shirt. And we have problems with it now. Like, Rich had a... the Netherlands 88 shirt, Rich had a blue version of that with a Netherlands crest on it. It looked pretty good, had a flock crest on it. And it's not real. And there's been several versions of that made by people, because the assumption would be, because they never wore an away shirt in that tournament, that would be what the away shirt looks like. Classic Football Shirts had a shirt recently, I think, and they talked about it, and it was, I can't remember what it was, I think it was maybe hoops or something. Oh no, it was maybe a figure eight pattern or something, and that would have more likely have been the away shirt that Netherlands would have had for that tournament. So they had this shirt which debunks the theory that the isometric pattern from the home shirt would have actually been on the away shirt as well. But this is what people will do. If there is a gap, people will fill it with information, and they'll say, okay, well, this is what it must be. This is, we extrapolate from this, this would be the case. And sometimes that could be proved wrong, but you've got shirts
and
on the market
by
that point.
We've seen this more and more on eBay, aren't we, with this dreaded P word, prototype, you know. Let's get an old teamwear shirt that's, you know, classic vintage 80s, let's sling an Arsenal badge on it and call it an Arsenal prototype. Sell it for 70-80 quid when it's not. So there's definitely, and we know for a fact this is happening, that they've gone beyond match worn shirts. Now they're making up shirts, and as I say, calling it a prototype.
Yeah,
who's to challenge it? Who knows?
Yeah, there are several retailers, in inverted commas, that are making retro shirts now, and they're, some of them are very accurate, and some of the quality is going to be. I don't know. I don't know how they're making them. I don't know what state the factory is in. I don't know who's doing it, because it's all clandestine, and they're getting very popular because they're looking at the retro market. And if the retro market is growing as we think it is, they're going, okay, well, they haven't done this yet and they haven't done that. So there's a window there where we can go, okay, well, let's make that shirt before it gets made officially, or that shirt can't be made officially because of the licensing, but people will definitely want it. And that's a massive problem where the licensing is allowing a lot of shirts. So then you look at that and go, well, if that shirt's available, then the equivalent shirt for my club must be available. You go and look, but because licensing doesn't spread across all of these different clubs, all these different manufacturers, there won't be the opportunity to make that shirt. So people go, I need that shirt from my youth, or I need it from when we won a particular cup. So I want it. So where do I go? And that's when these dodgy people come in and go, well, we can make it.
It's a very, very suspect market. I think from somebody personally that's been held back in a way by copyright issues and not having the financial clout to do that.
Yeah.
The idea that someone can knock off stuff that not only is exploiting a club's kit past, but actually creating fraudulent material. Because there's a difference between doing something, a design, a print or whatever it might be based on a shirt, to actually producing a shirt and slinging a badge on it. I think that is a big problem. And I'm amazed they are getting away with it. I know my understanding of how they operate, this is all being made in the Far East in very small quantities.
Yeah.
Quality, as you see them on your, you know, eBay screen, is okay. It looks very good. Sometimes the quality has been slagged off when the shirts have arrived, and sometimes not. Sometimes people have said, actually, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But there's the devil's in the detail. And that's where they often fall down. And like you said earlier, I can't understand how they can fall down on it. There's no way you can get an Umbro logo wrong. Everyone knows what they look like.
that is what I've noticed a lot. They are getting, even on the images that they're putting up, the Umbro logo seems to be the one that they're getting so wrong. And I look back and I go, did Umbro used to have that as a logo then? I need to go back and look at it. And it's like so bad. And I don't understand why they would get something like that wrong. But...
But again, you know, Jay, it's a business model that you think, yeah, I applaud. Okay, that's really good the way that you're doing this. You're providing a service, but at the same time, you've got to do things in the right way. Why should another company, spend all that money? I know the figures and the work that's involved with doing this.
Mm.
Why should they do that and someone else not bother? That's the problem a little bit.
There's the idea of knocking the big guy down and saying, okay, you've been exploiting people for 20 years, you give people a bit of polyester in it and you charge an enormous amounts of money for it when your margins are huge. But I don't really buy that argument. Everyone's been exploited by whoever this opportunist is, that these opportunists are, that are creating these counterfeit shirts, that they're exploited everyone. They're exploited the brands, they're exploiting the clubs and the consumer as well, because a lot of people don't understand it. We don't understand it that well, but the general public aren't going to understand the licensing elements. They're just going to see these shirts and go, oh, look, Adidas are making this shirt again. No, they're not. Clearly they're not. Not from this stupid brand with a terrible logo. That's not the case.
And the fact of the matter is, it's fraud, isn't it? It's only slightly morally more acceptable than when you go to London and see the knockoff Barca shirts in those little Oxford Street souvenir places. The really bad ones.
I don't understand how that's possible. I don't understand. On the major thoroughfare of a country, you can have so many of those things dotting around, and there's stalls, and they're in shops with these terrible...
Yeah, yeah.
That's not okay. It's not... Just because you haven't used the exact logo and the watermarking is terrible and the sublimation is... It's all sublimated and it's shocking.
Yeah.
You're still using Messi's name. You're still using...
Yeah.
You're still referring to a club that exists. So
I can't understand why trading stand... Well, exactly. Trading standards, it's like taking sweets from a child, isn't it? Shouldn't they just got to think, it's a bit quiet in the office today. I know, let's walk down Oxford Street and get our quota in for the month. It's
actually amazing. It's staggering.
Very strange.
I don't know. Yeah, so there are these spin-off elements. The other spin-off element is the information is the IP on a lot of these things are range-based by the manufacturer. So everyone got a template in say, 91, 92 with the obnoxious bars across the shoulder. So Adidas are now re-releasing that, not specific to clubs, but releasing a lot in their leisure range and the sportswear in like the gym market and all that kind of stuff. Athleisure. So they're re-releasing a lot of that stuff. So that's quite good because it's worth coming back. And the New Mexico shirt, not the New Mexico shirt. I don't know if New Mexico has a football team, but the the Mexico shirt that's about to come out, I believe, has those three bars at the bottom that Liverpool 93 and USA 94 shirts had. But has it as a watermark.
Right, okay.
So the Adidas stripes are on the shoulder, but it still has those big three bars at the bottom, which looks a bit odd, but it's nice that they're nodding back to those kits because they were interesting kits as well. So, just that's where the retro element comes in a little bit differently. As we say, there's all kinds of facets to it, and it's all round, I would say, it's a good thing for the consumer and the football fan and the football kit fan. Would you agree with that?
Definitely, because I mean, my argument is always that kits should not be forgotten about after that year is gone. You know, after that year, season, right, or even 9 months now, 10 months, some of them are so good, they've got to be remembered, and why not wear them again? So I think it really does provide a good service. It will be interesting. What fascinates me is where it's going to go next. What era are we going to look at, and what classic shirts, in inverted commas, are they going to pull out for the next range of Score Draw ones? Where is that going to go? How fondly do we is there a point when supporters stop fondly looking back on certain shirts rather than the likes of us kit nerds? You know, how does that all work? So it is going to be interesting, and potentially this deal with Score Draw and Umbro this year could blow it all apart. That could really allow things to expand.
That is in the retro market, that is sort of a final frontier, isn't it? To license out the retro elements to the people who had the license in the first place. And I prefer that. If that is something that's going to happen, that's much better. So Barcelona, obviously there's three Barcelona ranges. Nike actually released a range of 60 shirts with the Nike logo on them. So there was an idea that Johan Cruyff, when he played for Barcelona, 60s, 70s, whenever it was, 70s, I think, he would have had like a Nike logo on his chest. So again, the historian looks at that, this re-release of the Barcelona shirt from the 70s with a Nike logo and go, oh, right, Nike were producing football kits in the 70s. You think, no, that can't be good. So to always be able to get it as accurate as possible, if that as well as meaning that you license stages of your history out to different manufacturers, if everyone on board is okay with that, then that is the ideal, isn't it? I don't know how happy Clash football shirts will be with that, because I think that would be terrifying for them, maybe. I don't know. I can't be terrified about anything, but that opens up all kinds of different doors to the market.
Interesting. Definitely.
There are the brands that have gone bust and so on. So that's a grey area as well, about whether you can then reproduce items with the logos of people that have gone bust. Those Liverpool shirts.
Well, you can do that, because somebody somewhere will own that logo. So you just have to track down who owns it.
Track down the person. It's a licensing thing.
Yeah, that is doable. What was interesting, though, is when you talk about, you know, defunct logos, there's also defunct ranges. I mean, even as we're talking, just sort of glancing at Score Draw, some of their ranges have really reduced now. In fact, you know, Score Draw's portfolio is relatively small. And even on Tuff, some stuff you can't get anymore. So already we're seeing retro shirts. That's it. No longer gone. No longer available.
A shortage of retro shirts. That's amazing.
But it's interesting. Things will change, and as deals expire and everything else, that's where the variety will come in.
The one item that I would like is the Napoli socks that Diego Maradona wore for Argentina against Yugoslavia in the Italian 90 World Cup. So just
right. white socks. You know what, you've completely lost me there.
So Argentina had white socks in that game, so they obviously had Adidas socks for the game. But Maradona, because he was so individual for whatever reason, it was in Florence, and I still haven't worked out why he did it, but he wore his Napoli socks in that game.
Did he?
White Napoli socks instead of the Argentina socks. And they just...
I never knew that. What a great story.
Yeah. Plain white socks with just a light blue Nera logo on them. And Nera have gone bust, I think.
Right, okay.
I saw them on the web. I don't know. If someone would reproduce those socks, I would get those.
Excellent.
Immediately. And the Barcelona... That's another thing. The Barcelona white shirt from the 70s. It's just a plain white shirt with a Barcelona crest on it.
Get your felt tip pens out, Jane, do it.
I might do
it's
that,
easy but... done.
Yeah, I'll do
that's
that
this afternoon taken care of.
Yes, indeed. So those to end on that note, those are the items that I would get. So make those, whoever has the license, get the license, make those, and contact me and I'll buy those.
There's one sale.
So that's the retro shirt and kit market. We've done that. It's done. Is there anything else to say on that, John?
No, I think we've there's a lot of questions there. So hopefully we'll get some answers once this podcast goes out. It'd be nice if we can get some of these gaps filled in by people.
Yeah. So if anyone does know, then you can contact me. I'm J29ers on Twitter, so please contact me if you can fill in any of these gaps. John, you are True Colours Kits on Twitter.
That's it, yeah, perfect. Yeah.
And you're on Facebook as well?
I am. I've got to get more active on Facebook. Twitter seems to be the best way for True Colours at the moment.
Okay.
Twitter's great.
Good. And it's truecolorsfootballkits.com.
Website, yeah.
The website, okay. Well, have you got new stuff on there?
A little bit. I'm doing what I'm focusing on at the moment a lot is the Premier League kind of recaps, who's wearing what. So I'm fascinated to look at what away shirts are being worn and what the results of those away shirts are. So hopefully what I'd like to do at the end of the season is recap and say, okay, Chelsea wore their away shirt six times, three times they didn't need to, and they lost all of those games, and just see if there's any interest coming out of those figures. So that's kind of how that's going to work.
Oh, okay, interesting. Okay, so those are the ways you can get hold of John. If you are after the website, Design Football is Design Football on Twitter, designfootball.com on Facebook, and obviously visit the website, enter competitions. There's lots of different things going on right now, so enter those competitions. You can sign up to the website. You can set up your own competitions if you'd like to. So that's an option open to you. Have fun, because that's what the website's there for. So thank you very much, John, for coming on.
No, my pleasure. Always great to come on with you, Jay.
Pleasure having you on, and glad you could. We'll speak to you soon. And
excellent. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.